Hello, this is the Angry GM. This is the Angry GM's proofread aloud. The proofread aloud is of an article called Untitled Bullshit. Let's get on with it. Untitled Bullshit. I'm writing what I want to write today. Screw schedules and plans. Screw what I think anyone wants or needs. This one's for me. You can probably skip it. I doubt it'll be useful to you. I don't even know if it'll be useful to me. Let me explain. Well, wait. Let me disclaimer. This is what I call a random bullshit feature. I don't do them often. I have a rule. Despite some people telling me they're some of the most helpful things I write. Personally, I think they're crap. They're barely more than diary entries. They're blogging in its oldest, purest, most self-indulgent, least useful form. I use them to work out whatever is on my mind, to do with pretend elf games, of course, stream of consciousness style, and you get to read the inane babble that pours forth from my damaged brain. I don't promise there will be any useful advice, any structure, or even any kind of conclusion. All I promise is a pile of words. See why I've got a rule about not doing this shit very often? See also why I suggest you skip it, especially today? While I'm disclaimering, I've got to acknowledge that I'm still in extreme catch-up mode. You probably guessed that from my bunching up my March releases like this. I'm sorry, but also, I warned you it might take me a few weeks to get aligned with the grand plans I started the month publishing. What can you do? Stuff got snarled up, and I tried to do too many different things all at once. Consequently, I've had to shift my content schedule. Heavier, harder stuff has been pushed to April while I take care of other things. Despite appearances, I am bringing things together. I may have missed the moon, and I probably won't even hit the stars for a while, but I've managed some sort of stable high orbit. That's pretty good. Now that I've disclaimered, let me explain. Prelude to the feature that never was. I'd initially planned to put this feature out in the last week of December. Then I pushed it into early January. At the time, I called it My Life as a Half-Elf. I have no idea what the hell I'm going to call it now. I'm hoping a title will suggest itself by the time I'm ready to publish it. We'll see. See, I'd gotten into the tradition of doing a kind of New Year's reflection in late December or early January. I'd look at where I was as a game master and a content creator and consider where I wanted to be and then figure out what to do about that in the coming year. 2 years ago, it led to that whole True Game Mastery series thing, which remains one of my most popular and highly praised things ever, and also to the announcement that I was going to publish a crappy D&D knockoff engine codenamed the Slapdash Engine. Things went south after that. You all know this part of the story, so I'm skipping it. Obviously, I wasn't feeling up to the whole reflection thing to start off 2024, so I didn't do it. Neither did I do it this year, though I really should have. In My Life as a Half-Elf, I was going to talk about how I lost the plot and then figure out what the hell I wanted to actually do with Angry Games. It had culminated in me writing a new mission statement and setting myself back on course. I so should have done that. A month ago, I thought again about writing My Life as a Half-Elf. I swear you'll know by the end of all this crap why I was calling it that. A month ago, I considered writing My Life as a Half-Elf again. Instead of setting a new course and writing a new mission statement, I instead intended to use it to sort of introduce myself and my approach to the sudden influx of new readers my metrics were telling me had appeared. I wanted people to know what to expect from me and why I was different from every other role-playing gaming content creator out there. You know, apart from the fact that I mostly blog and haven't gotten around to any actual content creation in a long time, that is. Sorry, just get used to that. There's going to be a lot of self-recrimination today. You see, the reason I suddenly didn't want to write My Life as a Half-Elf was that I knew, deep down, that once I started writing it, I was going to talk myself into despair. See, I'm becoming increasingly convinced by several external outside factors that I have completely lost touch with role-playing gaming in general, and my audience in particular. Worse yet, I was realizing that I'd had a chance to do something great a couple of years ago, and now that window had probably closed and it would never ever open again, and now I was a useless old relic with nothing left to offer anyone. Yeah, skip the cheerleading and don't bother commenting. I don't need to hear it, and if I really did need to hear it, I'd also be incapable of listening to it. The problem with depression, real, actual medical depression, the problem with depression, well, one of the many problems with depression, is that you never know, I skipped a word there, is that you never know whether it's you talking or the depression talking. What I said above? Probably the depression talking. Bolstered by my own biases and heuristics, of course. You can't ever count them out. The unfortunate side effect of learning too damn much about psychology and neurophysiology, thinking they'll help you make and run better adventures and games, is that you learn how much your own brain is fucking with you. Even healthy, well-adjusted brains lie and cut corners and make mistakes. You have to treat your own brain with a healthy dose of skepticism. Of course, if you take that too far, you can make yourself neurotic, and if you're already neurotic, anyway. I know I'm making a difference to people like you. Hell, I got an email this morning in response to something I did in the last few days that was a very kind and heartfelt thanks for not just helping someone run better games, but also to be a better person. By the way, in case any of you dumbasses haven't figured out the lie yet, of course I do life advice. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm not stupid. Yesterday, or whenever the last Ask Angry actually got published, I took a giant-ass risk that the reader who wrote to me could handle some really heavy abuse so that I could deliver a very important message about how important empathy, charity, and active listening are in resolving conflicts. You probably noticed that gradually throughout the article, I shifted from abusing the reader to abusing myself, thereby making myself the monster abusing an innocent person who just wanted my help to drive the message home, to make it stick. I made myself the monster I was accusing him of being and stopped just short of yelling it out so you could all make the connection for yourselves. You don't accidentally do that kind of crap. I give life advice, but I do have rules about that. First, I only give life advice when it's also good gaming advice. I'm not a life coach, I'm a game master. Second, I only give life advice to help people avoid making a mistake I've made or to keep someone from having to learn something the same hard, ugly way I had to learn it. Third, I only give life advice if I can back it up with some good, reliable, reputable evidence from a published source from someone qualified to give life advice. Anyway, I know my voice matters. I know I've made a difference in people's games and lives. I know my readership numbers. I know my crowdfunding support levels. And I keep a giant-ass pile of emails and private messages that run the gamut from, thanks to you, I ran my first game and it wasn't a total disaster, all the way through to, I know you don't give life advice, but you changed my life anyway, so thank you. Intellectually, I know I'm doing some good for someone. That should be enough. It usually is enough. But I feel like there's been this shift in the gaming industry, in the gaming community, in the past 5 years. The role-playing gaming community, obviously. I don't need to say that. Everybody knows I'm talking about the role-playing gaming community. I don't know why I felt like I needed to clarify. I'm not talking about all gaming, like no shit at this point. Everybody knows that. I feel like there's been shift in the gaming industry and the gaming community. And community. Let's just say end community. But let's put role-playing gaming in there. I feel like there's been this shift in the role-playing gaming industry and community in the past 5 years. I feel like everything is drifting away from what I want from gaming. And I worry that maybe I'm alone, that everyone's moving on to something else except for me. This is where that whole half-elf thing comes in. I feel like I'm stuck between two increasingly disparate role-playing gaming worlds, and that I don't belong in either one, and While I have the sneaking suspicion there are actually a lot of half-elves out there, I'm desperately frightened that maybe I'm alone and I'm deluding myself. Given my furious work on the Slapdash engine and my serious need to rewrite my mission statement and get my content creation back on track, I'd really like to know whether there's a giant community the role-playing gaming industry as a whole, big publisher and indie alike, has stopped serving, or whether it's just me and I need to either evolve or die. Key change, mofo? Let me tell you about one of the best role-playing game sessions I ever ran. Let me tell you about that arena adventure. That's what we still call it. Even though it was 20 years ago and I no longer run a table for the players in question, someone still brings it up occasionally when we're catching up and reminiscing about old games. Hey, someone will say, remember that arena adventure you ran? A lot of the picayune details of that arena adventure are kind of fuzzy, but let me run you through the big picture stuff. In this especially magical world with a sort of magic as technology setup, I think I might actually have done this in Eberron now that I look back on it. A group of enterprising high-level wizards set up the world's greatest gladiatorial arena. They wanted the greatest warriors and spellslingers, and even the occasional fantastical monster, to fight the most spectacular battles viewable anywhere to the delight of a paying and gambling audience. This wasn't a blood sport thing or a place to throw criminals or people who followed the wrong religion. It was voluntary. It was supposed to attract the best of the best. So while the fights had to be real and spectacular, they also had to be safe, reasonably safe. Like any professional sport, accidents happen. But they weren't making the Thunderdome. They were building the fantasy MMA. Likewise, to make money off the venture, the wizards had to keep the audience safe. No wayward lightning bolts arcing into the crowd, no dragons getting loose and eating paying and gambling customers, none of that shit. Also, the fighters had to be matched carefully against each other based on rankings, certain shit had to be banned, and there could be no cheating or match fixing or anything. All of this is just good business. The fighting floor floated free in the middle of the arena, and during the fights, it was surrounded by a transparent sphere of force so that nothing got in or out. The sphere of force came from a magical device on a smaller platform floating high above the fighting pit, which was also inside the sphere of force. Everyone knows shield generators have to be inside the shields they generate. During the match, three high-level spellcasters, two wizards and a cleric, stood on the floating platform as overseers to activate the sphere of force and to intervene in the match if anything went wrong. They'd judge the fight and decide when it was over, and they'd use spells like Hold Person to stop an overzealous contestant from trying to get one last blow in. The whole thing was the fantasy blood sport equivalent of the Titanic. It was the arena where nothing could possibly go wrong. Naturally, something went wrong and thus began the adventure. The player characters were approached by the widow of a champion who'd accidentally died during a match. Apparently, it had been a freak accident. The dude hesitated or slipped or dropped his guard at the wrong moment, took an unlucky blow, and died from it. Of course, she didn't believe it really was an accident, especially given that it was the third such freak accident in as many months. The overseers were just chalking it up to bad luck. Their safety measures hadn't been compromised, and so they weren't looking into it. It's not like there hadn't been accidents before, just not three fatal ones in close succession. What else could the players do but join the lists and investigate from the inside? Given the risk this was an inside job, and given the overseers' insistence that nothing was wrong, they'd have to work quietly. Because combatants' privileges and access were dependent on their rankings, at least a few of them would have to fight up the ladder to earn some renown. Finally, they'd all have to make sure none of them became the next accident. So the players fought their matches and got to know the cast of Mortal Kombat characters in the current season and ran down clues and followed leads, and eventually, they put the pieces together. One of the managers was actually a shapeshifted, and pregnant succubus. She was working with a cult. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was Eberron because this is some Blood of Vol shit. She was working with a cult to harvest the heart's blood of the greatest warriors in the world to make sure her little demon spawn would pop out as a super soldier. Of course, the arena was a Darwinian wet dream if you wanted to harvest the hearts of the best in the fantasy Street Fighter circuit. They were covering their crimes by making them look like accidents, which also gave them access to the bodies. As to how she pulled off the crimes, it was like this. When it was time to harvest a champ and his match was about to start, the succubus would retreat to a hidden chamber under the arena and do an ethereal jaunt. She'd leave her body behind in a trance, and her spirit would float up and hide right under the arena floor. That would leave her out of the overseer's sight, in case one was using true sight to watch for ethereal or invisible security breaches, until the sphere of force was in place. Then she'd quickly slip up through the floor and go right into possessing her chosen victim. Once in control of the champ, she'd wait for a crucial moment and then just hold him back or make him hesitate or have him trip onto his opponent's spear or whatever. If the victim needed a little help dying, she'd also stop his heart or something. Then she'd slip back through the floor and wait for the sphere of force to shut off so she could return to her body. The players put enough of the pieces together to figure out what was going on. They didn't figure everything out, but they did know that one of the arena's managers was retreating to a secret chamber during the matches, and there was a magical mind control or possessing thing happening. They also knew she was a demon or a devil or whatever. They'd even worked out her magical schedule, They'd even worked out her murder schedule since she only ever killed the current champion, and for the last 3 months, there was always an accident on the same night of the month. Everyone knows magical pregnancy-influencing rituals have a strict lunar cycle to keep. Duh. So they knew when she'd be in the chamber and likely in a mind control trance. All they had to do was sneak down there and kill her before she woke up. Easy. Naturally, when the scheduled matches were published, one of the player characters was scheduled to fight the champ on the night when they knew the accident was going to happen. But that was no big deal. All he had to do was draw out the fight and absolutely not accidentally kill the champ. Meanwhile, the rest of the party could do what had to be done. Unfortunately, the succubus and her allies had tagged the player characters as meddlers. They'd gotten careless. She decided that this one time, a second place combatant would still be good enough for prenatal super soldier serum, especially if it got rid of one of the Scooby gang that was threatening her plans. So the fight started, the party snuck into position, and then the PC in the arena failed a will save and the succubus got in his head. Meanwhile, below the arena, the rest of the PCs discovered a small swarm of minor demons guarding the passage to the succubus chamber. They'd have to fight their way through. As soon as she was in the PC, the succubus knew the whole plan, and she panicked. She had to get out of the sphere of force and back to her body. She left the PC in a daze, with the reigning champ charging at him, thinking the fight was on, possessed one of the overseers, and then turned on the others with the intent of bringing down the sphere of force so she could get back to her body before it could be killed. A very complicated scene happened. The PC in the arena had to repel the champ long enough to convince him things had gone wrong. Overhead, a demon-possessed wizard was slaying his business partners. The PC and the champ had to intervene. And down below, the rest of the PCs were trying to fight through a wall of dretches or something to kill the succubus before the match ended. You see why we still talk about that arena adventure? That's the kind of gaming experience you never forget. And that is why I do this shit. For the love of the game, I love games. I fucking love them. All games, every game. Not just role-playing games, but all games ever. I grew up playing Atari and Nintendo and Super Nintendo and still play video games at least a few times a week, usually more. My family played the old family games like Monopoly and Risk and even Dungeon. When I was old enough, my father introduced me to his war games. Not the minis on sand tables, referee war games that Gygax used to play, mind you, but the Hex and Chip games. Strategic simulations used to put out with the little square pieces marked with NATO standard military unit designations and shit like that. I had my own collection of games, of course, bought with allowance money or the takings from my paper route or received from Santa or his birthday gifts. Fireball Island, Hero Quest, Screaming Eagles. I also bought and rented plenty of cartridges for my video game consoles. Action games and platformers and RPGs and puzzle games. I'd play anything. The thing is, though, that I didn't just love playing games. I loved sharing games. Somehow, I'd decided it was my solemn duty to make sure my sisters, cousins, and friends all had games to play, even if I had to invent them, teach them, and game master them. I was running games before I'd ever heard of Dungeons & Dragons. There was this one game I'd run for my cousin during family gatherings or when I was left to watch him for a few hours. I'd draw this Shadowgate-like menu set up on our chalkboard easel and then draw a series of first-person puzzle rooms. He'd tell me what he wanted to do. I smashed the chest open. Then I'd erase the picture and draw the results and tell him what happened. Actually, that game didn't predate my discovering Dungeons & Dragons, but lots of my other games did. In the pool, my sisters and my cousins and I would play this game based on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a fighting game. I'd take on the role of a series of boss characters and use floats and pool toys to launch patternized attacks, and they'd dodge or deflect them and then look for opportunities to attack. There was this game we played on an old cot where they were riding an out-of-control raft down the rapids, while I'd provide thrown pillow boulders to dodge or use my arms as low-hanging tree branches, and occasionally I'd offer power-ups. There was a spy game where they'd search for hidden evidence in a dark living room while avoiding a roving security spotlight I provided with a flashlight from my perch atop the stairs. I grew up in the Kids on Bikes era. In the summertime, Mom didn't care what I did as long as I wasn't home bothering her. I'd leave the house after breakfast and return before the streetlights came on for dinner. In the interim, my friends and I wandered the neighborhood or rode our bikes around doing whatever. I used to spend hours upon hours planning out these combination scavenger hunt LARP games and hiding treasures, clues, and maps in our favorite spots so I could run my friends through a Dragon Warrior quest that weekend. I don't want to brag, but as I think back on all that shit, I have to admit I had a pretty good understanding of game design even as a kid. I'd absorbed a lot from my board games and Nintendo carts. I understood the importance of patternized attacks the players could learn and avoid, and I knew how to construct a solvable puzzle and conceal hidden things so they could actually be found. I couldn't put any of that shit into words, of course. I was just imitating my favorite game experiences so I could share them with my friends. Only better, because they were mine. It's a damned good thing that Menser's Basic Dungeons & Dragons was the version I found at Waldenbuck's. If I'd have opened my box to find that Holmes or Moldvay crap, I would have noped the hell out of the hobby right then and there. Because Menser got it. His whole basic set was a pretty sophisticated, for the time, three-part lesson in building games for your friends. I was hooked. I choose joy. I've been devouring games in every form since I could hold an Atari joystick and understand the rigors of Candyland. My brain's full of amazing gaming experiences. I remember the weird mix of accomplishment and melancholy that came with beating my first game ever, Mega Man 2. And I remember the roller coaster of victory and dread and victory again fighting the Dark Souls bell gargoyles for the first time. I remember frustratedly picking my way through Shadowgate and Maniac Mansion. I remember feeling like something profoundly important had changed in gaming when day turned to night for the first time in Dragon Warrior 3. I remember the triumphant feeling of redemption when Cecil became a paladin. I remember the excitement when I bombed the Meridia tube. I remember portaling the moon. I remember deciphering the golden path. And I remember noticing that Oberdin's hammocks had numbers on them. Seriously, I could list 1,000 moments like those and why each one was significant, what each one meant to me. I won't, though. Each of those is a moment of joy. And when I say joy, I mean it in its correctest sense. I'm not talking about happiness. Joy is a wonder that such things can be, whatever such things happen to be. You can feel joy in sadness, joy in dread, joy in melancholy. Emotions be complex, yo. As a game master, I want to create joy. Joy is my gift to my players. I want them to wonder that such things could be. I love games, and I love all the different things that all the different kinds of games can do. Role-playing games as a medium let me create moments of joy and give them as gifts to my players. I can let my players feel how I did in the Glitz Pit when it turned out the arena was being used to siphon the magical power from the world's greatest fighters, while also letting them feel the dread that comes when you realize your plan has gone to shit and now you have to improvise, and also that feeling you get when you solve a Sherlock Holmes mystery before the story reveals the ending. This site is an extension of that. I want to give you the joy of giving your players joy. Whatever moments you carry with you because of your love of movies, video games, board games, books, anime, mangas, or whatever, I want to help you pass them on to your players. I want you to hear a player say to you 20 years from now, "Remember that arena adventure you ran?" My brain is full of joyful moments. All my experiences with board games and video games and movies and shared fun with friends and role-playing games and everything. I treasure them the way I treasure all the messages and emails people have sent me over the years, thanking them for the joy I've helped them find or create for their players. The thing is, there are a lot of joyless people in this hobby. I don't get it, but it's true. I've been doing this content creator thing for 17 years, and in that time, I've had everyone from Twitter randos to celebrities to editors at major game publishing companies tell me I'm doing everything wrong. They've told me I'm hurting the community, that my advice is not only bad but dangerous and damaging, and that I shouldn't be running role-playing games because I like the wrong games and I run them the wrong way. Until very recently, all the joy in my heart has shielded me from that crap. I know the truth. I know what I've given my players and what I've given to my fans, readers, and friends. I create joy, asshat, I can say, so fuck off. Adrift in the Great Inland Sea. I've commented a lot over the last several years that Dungeons & Dragons seems to be drifting farther from what it once was to me. I ain't talking about sociopolitical woke horseshit or the dumbass opinions of any activist mouth breathers who also happen to work at Wizards of the Coast. I don't give a single solitary shit about any of that, really. If you do, good for you. Go care somewhere else. I just want a tool set that empowers me to be a great game master, that lets me create joy for my players. D&D is still fun. It's still fine. Objectively, D&D is better designed today than it's ever been. I'd be lying if I didn't concede that point. I can still create great games with D&D just like I always did. But then, I can get a great game out of a flashlight and a pair of water wings, so spare me your edition war bullshit. It's a shitty artisan who blames his tools. I'm seriously burnt out on edition wars and system wars and all the rest of the joyless fuckery we gamers get up to. It seems like the only thing anyone cares about anymore is letting everyone else know what they hate. Isn't it kind of sad that the sweary, ranty guy who literally named his corporation out of spite is the one that has to point that out? I don't care what you hate, and I especially don't care if you hate what I love. If you want to waste your life on hate, go ahead and do it, but do it where I don't have to hear it anymore. That said, D&D isn't interested in giving game mastering tools to create gaming joy. It seems kind of embarrassed that it even needs game masters to work. And that's when it even remembers game masters exist. I get the sense D&D wishes it could just give players a fun experience without game masters getting in the way. You took away my monster design tools. Why the hell would you do that? Now I have to reverse engineer the math if I want to make my own monsters. I will. I had to reverse engineer the previous set of tools you bothered to provide and then rebuild them to make them usable. But I actually added some neat extra features and they came out better. And that's another thing I did that people are still using and praising today. I'll fix it. I always do. But that hurt. The game is overburdened with character building option bullshit and I can't even make my own monsters. Thanks for that. Seriously. Meanwhile, the big names were already chasing Watsy's tail. It's all focused on performance play or cinematic play or whatever the hell you want to call it. No, your favorite system isn't different. Spare me the comment. You all assume I never look at anything but D&D and I have no idea that other games even exist. Bitch, you do know it's my job to know what's going on, right? Yes, I know Pathfinder 2 exists. Yes, I know it's got plenty of tools. I also know what a fucking mess it is. If you actually try to tweak anything, hell, if you even touch the wrong tool at the wrong time, the wheels fall off and the engine catches fire. Besides, it's also turned into performance power play fantasy. Sorry. I know I just got done saying it's not productive to waste time hating on shit. I don't hate Pathfinder, to be fair, but it's doing the same thing D&D did, it's just one edition behind schedule. But that's okay because the indie scene has never been more robust, right? While D&D is marching toward a future I don't want, dragging its imitators and would-be successors along for the ride, the indie scene is hanging back, right? Well, the problem is it's hanging back a little too much for me. Again, I ain't disparaging anyone's preferred style of play, but the open-ended, player-driven experiences of old where tomb robbers tromp around the hex mat, defining their own goals and plundering ruins for lost treasures of forgotten empires, don't do it for me. I'm just not into the whole murder hobo scene. By the way, I'm using that term correctly, not insultingly. Murder hobo is one of those terms, like Karen, whose roots have been forgotten and now gets used in a way that's almost completely the opposite of its original intent, but I'm done dying to protect Jargon Hill, so fuck it. Also, I do admit I'm getting a little strawman-y for emphasis. Just forgive me this one, okay? I've been called a tyrannical railroader forcing his player puppets to dance on strings through his pre-written plots by enough grognards to have earned the right to stab a scarecrow of my own. I run the kinds of games I want to play. That's the secret, by the way. Doesn't matter whether you write books, design games, make movies, or just run games. Create the art you want to consume. Don't chase an audience that wouldn't want you in its midst. So what games do I want to play? I explained it thus to someone in a private chat recently. I need to take a sip. Some people, you put a sword in their hand, they'll use it to plunder ancient ruins just because they can. But if you put a sword in my hand, I'm going to find a dragon to slay and a princess to save. I want quests. I want challenges to win. I want mighty monsters to slay. I want puzzles to solve. I want mysteries to unravel. Give me a goal and dare me to prove I can accomplish it. I want that moment when everything clicks into place and suddenly I see the solution. I want climaxes that feel like they've been building up in the background for weeks or months and I'm only now noticing it. I want to recognize in a moment of desperation that shooting a portal onto the moon is going to save my ass. I want to be completely surprised by things I realize I should have seen coming and then have to adapt. I want moments of redemption and release. I want to discover something that changes my understanding of the world. I want to be celebrated in song and story. I don't want to be a murder hobo. I don't want to be Conan. I don't want to buy levels with plunder. I want to be Luke Skywalker. I want to be Indiana Jones. I want to be Aragorn, son of Arathorn. I'll settle for being Bilbo Baggins. I want to be Link. I want to be Samus Aran. I want to be the Doomslayer. I think there's room for both kinds of gamers in the role-playing gaming world. In fact, if I'm being honest and not trying to avoid yet another fight with some joyless one-true-wayist fuckwit screaming at me that anything other than XP for gold is a crime against my players, I'm pretty sure most gamers would rather be Luke Skywalker than Conan the Murder Hobo. Most gamers would rather be dared to win an impossible quest than pick their own destiny. Most gamers would rather kill a dragon and save a village than plunder a ruin and ruin the village's economy leveling up. Let me take a sip and read that again. I'm pretty sure most gamers would rather be Luke Skywalker than Conan the Murder Hobo. Most gamers would rather be dared to win an impossible quest than pick their own destiny. Most gamers would rather kill a dragon and save a village than plunder a ruin and ruin the village's economy leveling up. People crave something to fight for. Luke Skywalker is nothing without a Death Star to destroy. Luke is just a pantsless mute elf without a Triforce to reassemble. Batman needs the Joker. See, I never could have given my players that arena adventure without weeks of careful planning and construction. That said, I didn't know how it was going to end, though I did know that somehow, someway, I was going to split the party and lock someone in that arena with the succubus. And I didn't even know whether the players would get to the end. They might have failed. They might have died. They almost did both. That's the difference, by the way, between making a game the players can win and one they can't lose. In fact, the grand act of game design is knowing how to make something that the player can win and that the player can lose, such that the only difference between the two paths is the player's choices and skills. That, by the way, is agency, kids, no matter what any screaming fuckwits on the internet tell you. I'm rambling now. I say as if I haven't been rambling this whole time. My point is, I've had this sense over the last couple of years that there's a sort of continental drift going on in the gaming industry and its orbiting community. Role-playing GIA has split into two, and the two halves are drifting apart. East role-playing GIA is now for performance play, where the game master is a necessary evil, there only to give the players a stage to act out their dramas. West role-playing GIA is now for old-school play, where the game master is a hands-off referee whose only role is to build a world for the players to explore on their own initiative without meddlesome quests and incentives and plots and goals. And then there's me, in the middle, a game master who does what he does for the love of the game and the love for the vast, broad spectrum of experiences games can provide, and a willingness to do whatever it takes to create them. Someone who understands how to build a challenge you can win, a mystery you can solve, a climax that feels like it emerged organically, but also like it's been there all along. A game you can win or lose by your own skills and your own choices, but a game nonetheless. A quest where you earn your victory or your defeat and live with the consequences. A place for people who want to be heroes, who want to put that sword to good use. Not that I plan on quitting. I'm still betting there are a lot of game masters out there who got into this for the same reasons I did, and who run on the same passionate desires, and who are willing to work hard to make the best damned games they can for their friends, whatever game that happens to be this week, whether it be an open world that's carefully designed so the action never stalls and the players never feel lost, or whether it be a quest to cross the world to the Lonely Mountain and drive out a dragon so the dwarves can have their homeland back, or whether it's anything in between. So here I sit on my island with a sense that the sea is growing around me. I've got a bonfire burning on the shore, and I'll keep it going as long as I can. Maybe I'll die here alone, screaming at a volleyball about how amazing Chrono Trigger was. But maybe, just maybe, there are lots of other boats out there, and they'll see my fire and land on my shore. Maybe this island is bigger than I think. Maybe there's already a whole lot of people here, and I'm just missing them somehow. Maybe there isn't even an island at all, and I'm imagining the sea and the rift and the drift. Maybe it's all just the depression talking. Happy belated New Year.